Hi, I'm Rick Sanchez. I've been doing news now for some 30 years in two different languages all over the world, and here, of course, in the United States. I've interviewed four U.S. presidents, founded a billion-dollar company, and I believe, after all of that, that news should be direct and honest and impactful. And this show is called Direct Impact. Okay, so this is one of those stories that we prefer to tell you about in our own unique way, with the type of queries and comments that you likely would not hear anywhere else but here. So I begin with this. There's a coup in Latin America, to which you say, so what? What else is new, right? Listen, I get it. There are a few places in the world more synonymous with coups, or as they call them in Spanish, golpes de Estado, than in Central and South America and the Caribbean. The latest golpe comes from Brazil and Peru. In fact, take a look at these images. Peru's coups should especially come as no surprise to anyone, as it's had five presidents in the past 6 years. Think about that. As you watch hundreds and hundreds of people who are either killed or injured, as thousands upon thousands of people take to the streets protesting and rioting, and in this case, demanding that their president, a guy, interestingly enough, that they really identify with, be put back in office, they say. The violence and the clashes with the military have forced five different airports to shut down all over the country, even Machu Picchu. Machu Picchu, one of the most visited archaeological sites in the entire world. Unbelievable place, by the way. Shut down. People can't get there. A state of emergency has been declared. All of this in a country which has seen this type of thing occur over and over again. In fact, Peru seems to be setting records for political instability. It seems like no president can stay in office. And here's the question. Is that of its own doing? We're going to explore that. So what's the news with this latest case? Well, it's about the guy who's in the center of this storm. And let me tell you his name. His name is Pedro Castillo. And you know what? He's different. I mean, this guy's really different. Castillo is the closest thing to a true Peruvian than there has ever been. He grew up poor. I mean, this guy grew up really poor. He was a school teacher. He was raised in literally a mud hut. And this guy goes on to become the president of a country where that usually doesn't happen. Why? Well, I'll tell you why. Because the business class in Peru usually gets one of their own in the presidential palace. You know, the folks in Lima, the moneyed class. And more often than not, they do so with the help of our country, the United States of America. That's right. The U.S. has a long history of electing, I'm going to use this word because in many cases it's the truth, puppets. Puppets in Latin America and places like Peru. In fact, Peru has been one of the places where it's a given that the guy or the gal elected is going to be, let's just say, beholden to Washington. Castillo, it appears, was not. Now, is that the reason that he was removed? Or is it because he was legitimately corrupt? Yes, lefties can be just as corrupt. Righties can be corrupt as anyone else, right? So he's accused of taking money from contractors, kind of a pay-to-play scheme that is as old as the hills, but still corrupt. So are the charges real? Or is this maybe just another case of the right, with the help of the CIA, taking out another politician that they don't like, as has been part of the historics of Latin America? Good question. The answer may surprise you. The prosecutors who presented the charges against him are actually considered credible. Yeah. The charges also seem believable. And here's maybe the dagger in the heart for Castillo in terms of how he lost his gig, right? His own cabinet members, the people he put in there, right? They all bailed on him. They all said adios. They apparently also thought that he did something wrong, maybe even crooked. But then let's look at the other side of the coin, because there's also this. As soon as this dude Castillo became the president of the country, the moneyed class, the folks in Lima, they began accusing him of everything and then some. So when Congress finally steps in and tries to impeach him for corruption, he dissolves the Congress.
En atención al reclamo ciudadano a lo largo y ancho del país, tomamos la decisión de establecer un gobierno de excepción orientado a restablecer el Estado de Derecho y la democracia, a cuyo efecto se dictan las siguientes medidas.
Next thing you know, he's removed from office and he's jailed. And then all hell breaks loose nationwide. People are taking to the streets. They're demanding that he be reinstalled. And Peru is once again in a quagmire. Now, there's also Brazil, almost at the same time, where the Trumpian president, Bolsonaro, loses his election, as you've read, to the populist leftist Lula da Silva. And there, too, all hell breaks loose. Once again, people on the streets, Bolsonaro supporters, also out. They're protesting. They're demonstrating. They're breaking stuff. In fact, here are some of the scenes from Brasilia.
STF.
And while Bolsonaro supporters were on the streets in Brasilia, Bolsonaro himself was finding a new home just outside of Disney World. You can't make this up, right? Bolsonaro's literally in Disney World. He's in Orlando, Florida. He did not attend Lula da Silva's inauguration, has remained generally silent, and now the question is he going to be back? Or better said, will the U.S. State Department and the CIA want him back? And joining us now is Camila Escalante. You know, interestingly enough, Camila has a lot of experience. She works as a correspondent for Press TV in Latin America. And she's also the editor of Calçachung News, which covers a lot of these types of stories that we're going to be talking about. And look, two big things going on right now in Latin America. What happened in Peru, which I still quite don't understand. The bloodshed has been taking place for quite some time now. And then trying to understand what really happened in Brazil, a country whose ex-president is now in Miami or Orlando, Florida. We're not sure, while the people who seem to think he should be the president have been out on the streets. Meanwhile, in Peru, it's a different situation where they ousted the president. His backers are now out on the streets. They want the other president to step down. Figuring all of this out for us is what makes this so interesting. So why don't we start with the Brazil, if you would like. What really happened in Brazil? It looks to me like the people decided they didn't like Bolsonaro anymore, and they put in the guy who used to be the president, right?
Well, precisely. Lula did win by a couple million votes on October 30th. And even before that, for the last year, we've been seeing these sorts of threats of what the Bolsonaristas, the people who support former President Jair Bolsonaro, would do in a scenario if Lula were to win back the presidency in the vote. And so, of course, these people have been protesting in different ways. They have been urging different types of intervention in the electoral process. The election came around, Lula won. And since October 30th, we've seen lots of protests take place, so-called protests, if you want to consider them that.
But do they have a point? Is there anything about Lula's win which was illegitimate enough to raise the specter of people properly hitting the streets and saying, this is wrong. And if it's wrong, what was wrong?
Absolutely not. And the vast majority of supporters of Jair Bolsonaro, the vast majority of politicians aligned with Jair Bolsonaro and his political party in the Congress, the state governors have all accepted. They immediately accepted the win of Lula da Silva, and they congratulated him on his inauguration. They haven't in any way tried to interfere with that process. So it really is select interests in the country, be it agribusiness, be it those who are behind the deforestation of the Amazon, maybe other transnational interests. They're going after Lula because a lot of the other right-wing governors in the country, right-wing entities in the country, politicians, have largely said, let's try to work with Lula. Let's see how far we can get. Let's see how committed he is to pushing some sort of progressive agenda, or if he's someone we can work with. That has also been the position of the United States, who's not quite ready to coup him, it seems.
So this is an easy right versus left, moneyed interest versus campesino interest argument that's taking place in Brazil. Pretty easy to understand the way you just laid it out. Let's switch now over to Peru and try to understand what happened there with President Castillo. This guy lives in a mud hut. He's a teacher, really a poor man, becomes a president of the country. And right away, they start hitting him and hitting him and hitting him until eventually they want to impeach him. And he dissolves the Congress, so they won't impeach him. And then they remove him for dissolving the Congress. Interesting story. I guess the first question I have to ask you then is, was he corrupt? I mean, just because he's poor doesn't mean he's not corrupt, right? Was he corrupt?
He had no window of time in which to be corrupt. They were attempting to coup him from the day he came into power, before he was even inaugurated. The right wing and Keiko Fujimori, who was his opponent in that election in 2021, said that they would not recognize the electoral victory of Pedro Castillo. They knew he's someone who wasn't deeply ingrained in the political world, that he was someone who came to the Peru Libre to run for the presidency as a union leader from very humble background, as you described, and someone who didn't have a lot of clout. The institutions were so fragile in the country that they knew they could go and just attempt to take him out of office, and no one would be there to defend him. He wasn't someone who was very good at politics. He wasn't someone who was very good at taking advice or knowing what to do. He wasn't quite savvy. And so he was, from the very beginning, they were trying to oust him. He had no opportunity whatsoever to even make any sort of corrupt contracts or anything like that.
But what he did is highly questionable as well. Let's face it. He dissolved Congress. Dissolving Congress is an extreme act. Did he play into their hand by making himself look like the extremist, thereby giving them permission
to
oust
him? He never was actually able to dissolve Congress. He made that order, and he was swiftly carried off to jail, never to be released. Of course, now he's being held in pretrial detention. That order was never realized. He ordered a number of other things, including a state of emergency, and he said that they would reorganize some of the country's main judicial institutions. None of that ever happened. He was just immediately jailed. So they were planning on taking him one way or another that day, or inevitably. But, you know, this might be the product of receiving poor advice. He was going to figures like Luis Almagro, the Secretary General of the Organization of American States. And he was also allying with some right-wing politicians within the country and abandoning his own political party.
So this woman, Dina Boluarte, who is now the president of Peru, who used to be the vice president of Peru, she seems generally despised by the populace. Am I overstating that in any way?
Well, the Peru Libre insiders, the people on the left who were trying to give advice, trying to save Pedro Castillo from a coup, were advising him before this even took place. Watch out for Dina. She's going to be another Lenin Moreno, as we saw in Ecuador, for example. And they said, be very careful with her. Everything transpired. Of course, she took power. And since then, people loathe her even more and more because of the massacres we've seen take place, because of the bloodshed. We've seen just as many killings as days that she's been in power.
By the way, I have a podcast where I, as a journalist, as a Latino, and as an entrepreneur, tell my story and share with you what I've learned about how to succeed and how to grow. It's called The Rick Sanchez Podcast. I invite you to check it out, and I will see you there. But when we come back. We're going to talk about these riots that have been taking place in the Brazilian capital, and what about the U.S.?
So what we've got to do is identify the threats that we have.
It's crazy.
Confrontation, let it be an arms race.
Who is on offense? Very dramatic development.
I personally am going to resist.
I don't see how that strategy will be successful.
Very critical time.
Time to sit down and talk.
Welcome back. Has the U.S. changed the way it approaches Latin America? Because the worst kept secret all over the world, of course, is that the United States interferes there. I mean, that's a nice way to put it. Ever since the Monroe Doctrine, the U.S. has felt it has the right, a mandate almost, to do as it pleases in Latin America, as if it were a place that has little or no independence. But what is the situation right now? Did the U.S. interfere in Peru, for example? And what's it going to do about Brazil? We're talking to Camila Escalante. She is a fabulous journalist who covers Latin America in particular. We've been talking, of course, about what's happening in Brazil and what's happening in Peru, two countries with similar but yet not so similar situations. We got a sense from what you just told us about what's going in Brazil. And when you, I interrupted you because I wanted to flesh out Brazil a little more, but you were about to get into why you think the situation in Peru is very different. Please, can you take us through that?
Absolutely. Well, polls show in Peru that there is a very low approval rate of the sitting Congress, the Congress which tried to oust Pedro Castillo and which right now is running the country. They call it a parliamentary dictatorship. Hmm. And this is across the country. You know, Peru is a country that has had many, as you guys have probably discussed, many presidents in the last 6 years or so, let's say six presidents. And it's a country where there are very extreme levels of poverty. It's a very difficult country to be a working class poor person, an indigenous person. There's a lot of racism. There's lack of opportunity for young people. And so there's a lot of reasons why people might be very unhappy with what's going on. They finally brought someone from the popular sectors, from the indigenous communities, from the teachers union to power, someone who they believe represented them. And it might not necessarily be the best leader that Peru has to offer, but that's who they voted for and they stand by that. And so right now people have taken across the country in a grassroots manner. There are a lot of people not necessarily from the same political party. They don't necessarily support the same political leaders on the left or from the indigenous communities. But what they do want to see is a transformation of the country. They don't want to see their country dominated by transnational crime, by cocaine trafficking and production, by a corrupt military and corrupt politicians. And they want to be able to actually have a similar system as we see in neighboring Bolivia, where the constitution protects the natural resources and the right of the Peruvian people to control their own natural resources, their own industries, nationalize things. And so this is the example they're looking towards. this is the sort of platform that Pedro Castillo and Peru Libre ran on during the 2021 election, which he won. And that's the project that people still support. This is what they want to see implemented in the country. And by taking Pedro Castillo out of power, it leaves them with the same right-wing interests governing the country.
It seems like, you know that expression we all have about our children? He may not be incredible, but he's mine. You know, we defend our own. It almost seems like Castillo was, in many ways, he was the people's guy, right? I mean, Peru is divided into two parts, really. There's Lima and the moneyed interest in Lima, and there's the rest of Peru, which is los campesinos, the countryside, el pueblo, the people. And this guy was probably, if ever there has been, the embodiment of a guy who represented that sector. It was him. I mean, he was a teacher. He grew up in a mud hut. I mean, he was, a guy with indigenous roots. How much of what these people are fighting for in the streets today has less to do with all of the things that we've all been talking about, including Congress and the impeachment and the dissolvement and all of those things, and more to do with the people just saying, damn it, I like that guy. He was one of us, and I'm going to fight to get him back in office.
Well, I think that doesn't actually represent the majority of people. I think a lot of people want to defend their vote and their sovereign decision at the polls. They think that's important. But I think beyond that, they're very happy to press for a new set of elections in which there will be new candidates. Yeah. Pedro Castillo will likely not be one of them, especially because he continues to be a political prisoner today. And it might be with Peru Libre, it might be with another political party, but they want the project that they had voted on, which was a very comprehensive platform put forward by the party that he ran for. And right now, people are angry and they're demonstrating, mobilizing, and holding a general indefinite strike across the country, not because they want to reinstate Pedro Castillo, but because the total lack of rights, the total suspension of fundamental rights, and the grave crimes against humanity being committed by this coup regime against the Peruvian people, largely not in the major cities, not in Lima, but in the rural countryside, where those different campesino groups and communities, largely which are indigenous, live. And this is where the massacres have been committed. It's, like I said, very similar to what we saw carried out by Jeanine Añez in November 2019. The difference is that the massacres and the killings have gone even longer and with fewer denouncements internationally, and no sort of human rights body is intervening in any way from the human rights complex that's based in Washington and Europe. And so this is ongoing. They're very happy in Washington. State Department.
Let me ask you about. I'm going to interrupt you because when you get into that part of the conversation that I wanted to have with you, you know, it's interesting as we look at the situation unfold in Peru. And I don't know by the time this interview that I'm doing with you whether this story will have changed, because it does change an awful lot. We still don't know how it's going to end up, but people are dying every day on the streets of Peru still. We also know, or have heard, I'm sure you've seen reports, that U.S. diplomats in Peru met with Castillo's opposition. And there are even stories that they may have met with the vice president, who is now the president. Do you get a sense, do you have anything that you have seen document-wise or in terms of your own reportage, which might lead us to believe that the United States was actually involved in the removal and this whole near coup situation taking place in the country with getting Castillo out and putting the vice president in?
The United States government was among the first in the world to recognize Dina Boluarte when this all took place in early December. They essentially condemned what Pedro Castillo had done, and they recognize the new de facto regime.
Yeah, but so what? I mean, but so what? That's okay. I mean, there, if all you're saying, and I'm just to push back here for with you a little bit, if all the United States does is, well, there was a guy down there who was corrupt, they took him out, and now the vice president's in power. Okay, great. We support the vice president. That doesn't make them guilty of being playing a part in the coup, right?
Well, that in and of itself does not. We do see a U.S. ambassador in Lima, Lisa Cano, who has a very high, an extensive profile within the CIA, within the State Department, mm-hmm. who has worked both under Republican and Democratic Party administrations for decades with extremely important tasks overseas, speaks many languages. I mean, this is a top security intelligence agent that they put there for a very specific reason. And she was changed and put into that post quite recently. And so, as you said, she did sit down and have meetings, most of which are not secretive. We've seen all the photos of her posing with people who were part of Castillo's administration, including his defense minister. But we have to remember that the people who were in Pedro Castillo's administration were not necessarily his choice or his first choice. He was forced on many occasions from the very first week of his administration to change ministers and to shape his cabinet in a way in which pleased the right-wing Congress. It wasn't all people from his own Perú Libre party. And so they are meeting with people. They had met with people ahead of the coup, they being Lisa Kenna, the ambassador of the United States in Lima, and embassy officials had sat down with members of his government. And since then, she has been very fast to meet with all of the different newly appointed people under the new de facto Dina Boluarte administration.
That's fascinating. Well, that puts things in perspective, and that makes for a great conversation. And I really thank you for this. Camila Escalante, a wonderful reporter who is one of the few people who can actually speak to these topics with both reporting experience and as somebody who is a true Latina living in Latin America. It's a pleasure to talk to you. Thanks so much for taking your time and sharing some of your wisdom with us. And before we go, I want to remind you of our mission. Simple, really. I want to help de-silo the world. We've got to stop living in these disparate, separate little boxes. Truths don't live in boxes. They're everywhere, right? I'm Rick Sanchez. I'll be looking for you again, right here, where I hope to provide a direct impact.